Jolie Justice served 8 years in the Missouri Senate.
When I first got elected in Jefferson City, if I said to my fellow senators, regardless of party, this is a local control issue, just let us take care of Kansas City, with almost without exception, they agreed with me.
Now, doesn't seem to work that way. Two former legislators now on the Kansas City Council, today on Statehouse Blend Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. With 500,000 people, Kansas City is the largest city in Missouri. Its businesses are an engine of the state economy. The metro has a large and ideologically diverse delegation in Jefferson City. But sometimes it feels like the city's interests aren't at the forefront of discussion there. And some years, as in the legislative session that just ended last week, some of the metro's highest priorities and key issues don't seem to go Kansas City's way at all. Today, we are assessing how true that has been this year and why that is and how the city tries to address it. Who better to talk with about that than two elected officials who have been on both sides of the equation? Kansas City Councilwoman Jolie Justice represents the city's 4th district. Before that, she was a state senator for 8 years. She rose to serve as minority leader. Kansas City Councilwoman Justice, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Can I call you Jolie?
Please.
Okay.
Please.
And also Councilman Kevin McManus. He started serving as 6th District Council member after 4 years, 4+ years in the State House.
Right.
Kevin, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I have to ask you guys, when you saw the reports of the end of the session last week, late nights, last minute wrangling, did you miss it?
No.
Okay, next question. Not even a little bit?
You know, I always found the last week of session to be pretty exciting. Obviously, that's where the bulk of the work is done. And I was glad to watch it from my own bed in Kansas City.
Yeah. I mean, it is. You're right. I think most people probably at home don't understand how much gets done in the last minute. And it's actually, if you're there, I think it's terrifying because you're voting on things, particularly in the House, which is probably different than the Senate, with a very short time frame to review what's happening, what amendments are being put on what bills. And oftentimes you don't have time to even get up out of your seat to go to the restroom. So that's the part that I find, as a House member, I always found difficult.
I was struck at listening to the audio stream of both houses, how many of the questions, I have a question for the sponsor, and the question was, what's in this?
Right. Right.
Sure.
So maybe you miss it a little bit. How do you perceive that it was different this session than back when you guys both served in the House? It's been a couple, or in the Senate, it's been a couple years.
The reports that I was seeing made it look like it was a lot different, that a lot of the civility that I experienced, for the most part, in the Senate had really broken down this year. And there's obviously a real fracture right now between the second floor and the governor's office and the rest of the legislature. That is, as rough as things got between both the Blunt administration and the legislature and the Nixon administration and the legislature, I've not seen that sort of fracture in my 8 years.
You know, interesting statistic that this was the lowest number of truly agreed and finally passed bills in like 4 some years.
And that's the ones that actually make it to the governor's desk.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, you could look at that and say, well, less government, that's the philosophy, you know. But I think there's more to it than that. I think there was some dysfunction. No legislative session is like the other. But this one, I think, Julie's right. I think there was something more going on there.
And dare you suggest what else it is that is going on there?
Part of the problem that they have right now, obviously, has become this supermajority. And this has happened traditionally, whether it's Democrats having a supermajority with a Democratic governor or Republicans. It is tough because then there's a lot more infighting amongst the party that's in power. So I think that is a unique thing. And then I think term limits, with the huge turnover that we have, you've got a lot of seasoned folks who are out there working hard to get their agendas done. But then you have brand new folks who this is their first session and don't even really know what's going on yet. And so trying to get everybody up to speed on a lot of really complicated issues is difficult when you've got a lot of really complicated issues.
Yeah. Yeah. How different is it serving on the city council? Is there anything that compares between being a state legislator and a city council member? Which do you like more? How is it different?
I love my job that I have representing the 6th District. I think it's totally different. I mean, it's a real 180. I think the similarities are that you have constituents, you're working on legislation, you're trying to be responsive to their needs, you're trying to do work on programs or policies that will be impactful, but you're more on the front lines when bad things happen. you're there, you're part of it, you're here. People expect to see you. Every night there's something going on, and you're not in Jeff City, and so you're expected to be there and to show up. And not a knock on state legislators. I mean, that's an incredibly, I think, difficult job because you're away from your families, you're away from kind of your home for a long period of time. But the city council, I think, that's what, to me, that's one of the main differences is just the accessibility and the expectation that you're here.
Kevin's absolutely right. It was interesting. I felt like when I would come back from Jefferson City, I'd get off the train on Thursday nights, and there was almost this, there was a sense of relief to be home, but my constituents were high-fiving me and hugging me and saying, thank you for standing up for Kansas City. I tell you what, when I walk out of my front door in the morning, folks want to know why their trash isn't picked up and how to slow the traffic down, and it's a completely different level of just kind of serving constituents, and I agree with Kevin. I love it. I've never worked this hard in my life, but I find that you can solve problems within hours as opposed to years that it took sometimes to solve issues in Jefferson City. It's really very rewarding.
Well, that's good to hear. Are you worried that you say these things and you're going to have all these people want to come back home from Jeff City and take your seats on the council?
I say that anyone who wants to serve in public service, the more the merrier. We need a lot of good people to do this work.
Well, I do want to talk about kind of the way those two jobs actually do go together and the way that the city acts and tries to act on what's happening in Jefferson City. You two are actually co-chairs of the legislative committee of the city council. What even is that?
So it's essentially, well, it's usually us talking over each other.
Just like here. It's fine.
We have committee hearings that are open to the public, and staff and the public come and present what they think the city's priorities should be, both at the federal and state level, and getting legislation accomplished. And then through that process, which takes many, many weeks, if not months, we develop a series of priorities and positions for the city that we then submit and then advocate for to both our state and federal partners.
And how do you actually advocate? What does the city do to try to influence legislation in Jefferson City?
Well, several things. First of all, it means several trips to Jefferson City by various city council members to lobby our state legislators on all of the issues that are important to us. We obviously have also contract lobbyists that we engage who are our eyes and ears on the ground. They're the ones setting up the appointments when we go down to visit, but they're also the ones who are going back with the legislators to make sure that they're still okay. And frankly, a lot of times the agenda we set up at the beginning of the year is robust and exciting, and it's progressive, and then we end up spending a significant amount of time on defense. And so we also rely on our legislators, our senators, and representatives. We are in constant contact with them through text messages, phone calls, and otherwise. And so it's really kind of an all hands on deck sort of thing.
Let me just say that I think we have an outstanding local delegation, and they're very accessible. I think not just to their constituents, but to the city council. And so we are fortunate to kind of have that. Julie served, obviously, with Senator Curls, as did I when I was in the House. Senator Holzman and I were in the House together. But the folks in the House, I have a lot of respect for because I know how difficult that job is. So we're in constant communication there. But Julie's absolutely right. Part of the job is defense, a large part. And that can turn on a dime when amendments get thrown out there on certain bills that might affect the city.
Well, I want to ask about how you think certain bills did affect the city this year. But let me start with this. If you look over the 2017 legislative session, is there one most significant issue for Kansas City that you think was handled, whether you think it went well or not well, Kevin?
I think the UMKC Conservatory is a huge win, particularly in this political environment, to say that, you know, not just a small majority, but an overwhelming majority in both houses adopted a resolution saying that we want the state to commit to paying $48 million for a state-of-the-art, world-class conservatory here in the Crossroads, right next to the Performing Arts Center, to educate not just students from around the world and bring them to Kansas City, but to also acknowledge that that's going to have a huge economic impact in Kansas City, you know, going forward for generations. So I think, and let me just say, that's a 50-50 match, and Julie can go more into this, but that $48 million from the state, they're getting double that in terms of the investment here because it's being matched with private donations.
And we should point out at this point that KCUR is an editorially independent radio station that's licensed to the University of Missouri, and of course we operate here at UMKC. I should also disclose that a member of my household is involved in that issue as well. Jolie, I mean, yes, it's a 50-50 match. The money itself hasn't been appropriated yet. They've simply said they will at some point in the future. Are you concerned about that?
It hasn't been appropriated yet. And of course, you're always concerned until you have the actual appropriation, because many great ideas over the years have been passed by the legislature and then never funded. And so we are staying in constant contact with our lobbying crew, with our legislators, and with, frankly, the civic community. Warren Erdman taking the lead at that from Kansas City Southern as a former University of Missouri curator. He has done an amazing job of really continuing to push this issue since the close of session, obviously during session as well. The governor has until about mid-July to either sign that HCR or not sign it. If he does not sign it, it will go into effect. It does have the force of law. But then we still will need to make sure that we stay on the governor so that we can get those bonds issued and we can get this project moving forward.
Governor hasn't said whether he will sign it or not.
We have not heard yet.
Yeah. Are there other issues that you think affected the city in especially significant ways this term?
You know, one of the ones that you never planned on being a big issue, but then it kind of dropped in our laps, was the Real ID issue. Mm-hmm. And that was a significant issue that needed to be tackled this year.
Which is a statewide issue. It affects whether you live in Kansas City or not.
Absolutely. This was not Kansas City specific, but it was incredibly important, especially for our military partners here in the metropolitan area, to, frankly, a lot of our freight carriers, and then, of course, to our airport. We wanted to make sure that our citizens, when they show up, whether they're flying to St. Louis or Paris, France, that they have the ability to get on a plane. And we needed to change the state law, and I'm really glad we were able to do that. There was a lot of thought at the beginning of the session that there would be too many obstacles, and really big shout out to both Representative Kevin Corlew and Senator Ryan Silvey, who really, really shepherded this through and got it done for our city.
Both regular guests on this podcast. I mean, does that seem to you, though, like the kind of thing that demonstrates maybe a recurring issue in the relationship between the city and the legislature, which is to say that was really hard. It took years to get that passed, even with what appeared to be bipartisan support from most quarters in the legislature, even with strong work by Kansas City area legislators on it, it still took until right up against the deadline to get it passed. Does that say something about the way city priorities sometimes do not seem to be understood or valued in Jefferson City, Kevin?
When I served in the House, I was in the minority. At first, it was a relatively, decent minority, and it became a super minority. The minorities are obviously Democrats in the House and then in the Senate, and they primarily represent the urban core. So, you'd be kidding yourself if you didn't acknowledge the fact that partisanship plays something in how these priorities are presented.
And is Kansas City, I said at the top of the show that there's ideological diversity, and I think most of that diversity comes in the suburbs of Kansas City, but mm-hmm. but the metro area does have Republicans and Democrats. It sounds like the values of the Kansas City priorities seem to be at a disadvantage because Democrats are in the minority. Is that fair?
There's something to be said about that, but I think the caveat that I should recognize also is that you mentioned Kevin Corlew, who's a Republican, in the metro area. I'll throw out, obviously Ryan Silvey in the Senate, Jack Bond in the House. We had many Republicans who actually were very supportive of these things. And when I was in the House, I was co-chair of a bipartisan caucus that represented Kansas City. That was actually really successful in getting things done. I think, in a way, we actually are better. Since this is KCR, I'll just say it. We're better than St. Louis at handling some of these things. There it is.
Yes. And our producer, Matt Hodak from St. Louis, would like to take issue with that, but we'll come back to that.
But I just want to say that I think, even though there's that partisanship element that an ideological difference that enters into the conversation, I think there are folks that, even when I was there, but even also now, that on both sides of the aisle recognize that these things are important for Kansas City.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is really hard for folks to understand who watch mainly just local government and city council is that it is incredibly hard to pass anything in Jefferson City.
That's right.
The average cycle of a piece of legislation, even a non-controversial piece, is 3 years. So to get something done in Jefferson City is incredibly hard to begin with. And a lot of folks in Kansas City see the fact that it takes a long time to get anything done as a city versus rural divide, and there sure is absolutely a city versus rural divide. But part of it also is that we've set up a form of government that just makes it hard to pass laws. And so when you get something that also brings in the extra layers of the partisanship, brings in the extra layers of the rural versus urban, you start to see even more difficult legislation.
Let me just add to that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You know,
That's right. That's why we set up this form of government.
Right. Sometimes you want it to be difficult. And the reason, obviously, is you want to have a lot of input and conversation about something before you just rush out there and make it law.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to have an impact on, this year in particular, it's been hard to pass things, and that hasn't necessarily come down to an urban-rural divide. But since you brought that up, I mean, why is that divide in place? I think it makes sense that the different parts of the state would have different interests, whether it's an agricultural area having agricultural interests or business development in the cities. But for some reason, it seems obvious enough to the average person that they need each other, that they feed each other. Why does that conflict persist to such a degree in Jefferson City?
I think one of the problems that we have is we don't have the level of communication and relationship building that we had maybe even 10, 15, or 20 years ago. I don't know if you remember this, Brian, but the last 2 years of my tenure in the Senate, I was redistricted, and I no longer represented Kansas City.
Your district went to St. Louis.
Well, almost. Yeah. I went to rural Missouri, actually. I had Callaway, Audrain, Monroe, Montgomery, Warren, and Lincoln counties. And so I spent my Fridays during the legislative session visiting my new county and meeting with the county commissioners. And I would show up on a Friday, let's say in Montgomery County, and we'd sit down, and I think they expected to disagree with me on everything. And then I'd find out that their number one priority is not having a toll road on I-70, which of course conflicted with the people who had elected me in Kansas City. But their number two priority was an angel investor tax credit, which at the time was Kansas City's number one priority. So as we sat there over the course of the day and started to make those connections, we realized we had more in common. I don't think that the way we have politics set up right now, the way we have extreme divides, this is local and national, that we do enough relationship building. I think we need more folks who are more closely aligned to represent the moderates across the country.
Is that a realistic expectation, Kevin?
I think there's going to have to be some changes. And when I say changes, I mean obviously internal in people's hearts, but I think external, obviously, in how we set things up. I mean, the gerrymandering that we have, kind of the system of drawing districts so that they're hyper-partisan and so they're decided by primaries, not by generals, has something to do with it. I think term limits has something to do with it because people don't have the institutional memory or the willingness to develop those relationships because they're just looking for their next move. That has something to do with it. I think ethics reform and I think dark money and the influence of outside special interests has a lot to do with it. So those would be my three things that I would say if you want to tackle that issue, let's go do it. But they've been very difficult to accomplish.
But you think it would succeed in sort of bridging this this so-called
I think it could
divide.
Change the culture. Yeah.
One issue that did make its way to the governor's desk, one of the few bills that did, was the one that passed on the last day of the session that said cities may not raise their minimum wage above the state level. And right now that's $7.70. Kansas City had already approved raising it to $13 over the next 6 years gradually. That would have started kicking in this September. There's a ballot measure that would raise it even more and faster. What's the city doing? What are you as city council members trying to do in response to this action from the General Assembly?
One of the things that we have to do is continue to have a conversation about how we in the city know what we need in order to be successful. And one of the things that we need to do is acknowledge that the cost of living is higher there and that our citizens deserve the right to make a living wage.
Okay, but the law is the law. I did ask one of your colleagues earlier this week, Quentin Lucas, about this and about what he thought the city might do in response. Actually, we have tape of what he told me.
That said, if he signs in the piece of legislation, then I think we're looking at more legal challenge. There was a Missouri Supreme Court case that, in essence, got us here, and I would fully expect for the business community to challenge Kansas City's ordinance since it's still en route to become effective, and that is what the approach would be. But I expect the city to continue to uphold its legislation until a court tells us not to.
Kevin McManus, do you see this eventually ending up in court?
Yes. I could tell you with certainty. And you know what? It's a complicated legal issue now because...
Yeah, what is the legal issue? I mean, what's the defense of the city against state law, which seems like it would preempt?
There's an argument that there was a window left open with the prior bill. And the legislature acknowledged it because they passed another bill just recently.
To close the window.
Yes. And so we took action to preserve the right to assert our interest in protecting our citizens by saying we're going to pass our ordinance to see if a court would uphold it because we were within that window. And now the legislature has tried to preempt not just future legislation, but the latest bill preempts past. Really everything. And so now it's really, I think, going to be up to the courts to figure out, you know, to listen to the arguments on both sides, review the statute and the ordinance, and to figure out what's the right way to handle this.
I know one of the issues is that although the legislation passed, the Kansas City ordinance passed prior to the state's action, the increase doesn't actually take effect until afterward, and that might make this a harder case. Is that your perception, Jolie Justice?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We actually took action at the council this week relating to the ballot initiative that will be on in August, and we changed that language to make it take effect before this bill. So this was going to end up in court, and we will see what happens.
The minimum wage issue is one of those that raises this broader philosophical question about the relationship between state and local government, isn't it? You both are Democrats. You believe, don't you believe in big government? Don't you believe that local control is not the primary consideration, that sometimes you do things that cross city boundaries?
Brian, it was really interesting because when I first got elected in Jefferson City, if I said to my fellow senators, regardless of party, this is a local control issue, just let us take care of Kansas City, with almost without exception, they agreed with me. Almost without exception, they would say, okay, fine, that's Kansas City, we're going to let you be. That has changed dramatically in the last 8 years. We first started to see the change with the adult entertainment industry laws that were passed. It was very interesting to me because Senator Wilson at the time was actually pushing, Yvonne Wilson from Kansas City was pushing a ban on shooting guns for celebratory purposes, which was something that impacted our city quite a bit. And the Republicans in the legislature at the time were saying, no, we want local control. If you don't want to shoot guns on New Year's Eve, then you ban it, but let us do that. The same time, they were trying to ban adult entertainment statewide, and the argument was made, well, if we want to have it in Kansas City, let us have it in Kansas City, but you can ban it in Branson. And they said, oh, no, this is a much bigger moral issue, and we need to control this from the state. So that's really where things started to change. And I think as that's also increased, that idea has increased as they've gained more and more power as far as numbers are concerned.
And that's how Jolie Justice became a defender of adult entertainment. but let me ask you, Kevin, when you served in the House, did you feel like you as a Kansas Cityan were able to act thoughtfully on something like, environmental regulations for farms in outstate Missouri? I mean, you care about the environment. Don't you think you had the freedom, the right, to the privilege of acting on those issues?
Yeah, but I would also go talk to my colleagues who were from that area and get a lot of information. So, I'm not going to self-impose what I think Caldwell County should be doing until I talk to people from Caldwell County. And, you know, it's funny because I was in the legislature during the Obama administration. And so we spent a lot of time passing non-binding resolutions telling the federal government that we don't want them in our business. And I'm not, when I say we, I mean the royal we, the legislature.
Mm-hmm. You weren't voting for those.
Well, yeah, not generally. And number one, they're non-binding. Number two, we spent a whole lot of time that we could have been spent on something else. But the point being is that the argument for all those was that we wanted local control. And, you know, I do see the validity of that argument, and particularly now that I'm at a local level, And like we just discussed earlier, we're out there every day, every night, talking to people about what they want and how they want the city to operate and what they think is important to the city. And I do think that there's value in local government. I think that we're the closest to the people, and that we have probably, I'm not saying that we're better, I'm just saying that we have, I think, up-to-date information as to what people are looking for.
Yeah. Another issue that came up once again this year, I think it's the 18th year in the General Assembly, and I know it's one that was very important to you, Jolie Justice, and that was MONA, the Missouri Non-Discrimination Act, which would ban the termination of LGBT individuals based on their gender identity or their sexual orientation. You actually are one of the few who got to see it approved in one chamber in the Senate while you were minority leader, which was considered by many people pretty remarkable in the Republican-controlled Senate. Nevertheless, it didn't pass the House, and it has never actually passed both the House and Senate. What was your reaction to this year's experience with MONA? Was it any different? And where do you think it goes from here?
One of the things that excited me the most was when I started receiving text messages from our colleagues in the Democratic Party who represent Kansas City, who are in the House, asking me if they should trust this Representative Engler. He's a Republican from the boot heel. He wants to introduce MONA on the floor and have a floor debate. Should we trust him? And I said, absolutely, without question, because he is one of the examples of when you can sit down and have a conversation about what this bill does and what it does not do. He gets it, and he's been a crusader for it ever since. And so I believe that we will eventually get to where we need to be in the state. It may be through legislation. It may be through court action. But eventually, we will come to a time and a place where you cannot fire someone because they're gay or they think they're gay. You can't kick them out of their house because of their gender identity. It is a very long, slow process, and we will get there eventually.
It was interesting to hear Representative Engler, who introduced it for debate, eventually pulled it off the floor. He withdrew it, but said this is his last term, and he hopes that leadership will follow the custom of a representative in their last year getting to bring a bill of their choice to a vote on the floor. If he follows through on that, if leadership follows through on that, you'll see the Missouri House vote on MONA next year.
And I believe that it is my opinion that that is a bill that could pass through the Missouri House of Representatives. And Brian, to be clear, a lot of things happen in Jefferson City during the last week of session because other people want things more than they don't want what you want. And I know that was a very complicated sentence.
Can we diagram that?
But I will say this, that the year that I passed MONA out of the Senate and I was able to get, I think, 10 or 11 Republicans to vote with me. We had a lot of folks who did it because they just looked at me in the eye and said, you've been good to me, and I'm going to vote with you, Jolie, because this is you asking me. But there were others who said, I'm voting because I want a charcoal tax credit bill to pass. And I said I was not going to let the charcoal tax credit bill pass unless they gave me a positive vote on MONA. And so that kind of horse trading happens in the last week of session, and that's why I think that there's always a possibility like something like this could pass.
Last question I have for you guys is about an issue that we haven't talked about yet, and that makes sense because the General Assembly didn't talk about it either, and that's transportation. Oh. I know it's something that's very important to Kansas City. Perennially, the issue is that there's way too many miles of state highway for the state to know how to pay for the upkeep of all of those roads. And perennially, what we hear is that cities take the brunt of that problem because of their dependence on roads and the major highways that run through the cities. What's the conversation like between you as city leaders and the state on that right now?
I can't say that there really is much conversation right now on that. And I think as a city, that's why we've taken our own road, sorry for the pun, but we went out and with the support, thankfully, of the voters, got our bond package approved for infrastructure. And is that a solution for our state highways? No, it's not. But it's a solution for us here locally. And, ultimately, there is going to need to be a decision on how to address that problem, I think, statewide.
And I think one of my frustrations regarding the issue of local control is that increasingly we are taking on the burden of so many things, whether it's transportation, health care, home food delivery for our residents. I mean, all of the things that were once handled by the state are slowly trickling down to the city. And one of the things that's frustrating is when we get into these fights about local control, we're expected to take on more of the responsibility, yet they won't let us govern the way we want to govern. And so I think that you're going to see more robust conversations between our city and the Missouri Department of Transportation on how we solve some of these big issues. And I am excited that our legislators, both in the Senate and in the House, are just amazing partners with us on those conversations. They've been fantastic.
That's former Senate Minority Leader and current Kansas City Councilwoman Jolie Justice. Thanks, Jolie, for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
And former State Representative and current Kansas City Councilman Kevin McManus. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
It's good to have you both here. State House Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and review it if you like it. That's how people find out about us. We're on iTunes and Google Play and on the NPR One app. We're on Twitter as well. I'm at PTS Brian. We use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. If you care about Kansas, okay, we care about Kansas. Statehouse Blend Kansas is hosted by Sam Zeff, and he's on Twitter at Sam Zeff. We've got a big live event coming up this week. Join us Thursday, May 25th at Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church. It's on Linwood Boulevard, just east of Highway 71 in Kansas City. We'll be talking about the session and about whether the voices of people of color are heard in Jeff City. Representatives Gail McCann-Beatty, Daron McGee, and Brandon Ellington will all be there. You are invited, too. We hope you can join us. Find out more on KCUR's Facebook page or on our website, kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.